and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. A judge held a hearing on the deportation case of a Maryland man mistakenly deported to an El Salvador prison. The Trump administration says it cannot bring him back to the U.S. despite a Supreme Court order. The judge now ordering expedited evidence and discovery on the case, saying the Supreme Court has ruled. Residents in Iowa now demanding answers from Senator Chuck Grassley during a town hall today.
In southeast Iowa, in a county President Trump won by more than 25 points last year, GOP Senator Chuck Grassley heard an earful. Grassley responded that the decision to deport Kilmar Abrego-Garcia was outside of Congress's realm. Grassley said Abrego-Garcia's fate is now up to the president of El Salvador. Stephen Portnoy, ABC News, Washington.
Indiana and Idaho, among states announcing they'll ban food stamps from being used to buy sugary drinks and candy. It's all part of the Health and Human Services plan to make America healthy again. The deadline to file your taxes, midnight tonight. This is ABC News.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
For WRCE 107.7, I'm Joanne Krulatz. State Superintendent Dr. Jill Underley has called for increasing the special education rate and expanding mental health training programs available to Wisconsin schools as part of the 2025-27 biennial budget. The message comes as the Wisconsin Department of Public Instruction published a report on the use of seclusion and physical restraint in schools during the 2023-24 school year, showing an increase in the practices. The data reported to the DPI by school district shows a 15.3% increase in incidents where seclusion was used on students and an increase of 16.9% in incidents where physical restraint was used on students compared to the prior school year. Statewide schools reported 6,222 instances of seclusion and 7,439 instances where physical restraint was used. In her 2025-27 biennial budget request, Dr. Underley called for increasing the special education reimbursement rate, which hovers around 30%. Building off her recommendation, Governor Tony Evers proposed increasing the rate to 60%, which allows schools to invest more in hiring specialized staff, create more inclusive learning environments, and offer more professional development for staff. Dr. Underley also requested $760,000 over the biennium to increase and improve support for existing mental health training programs available to schools, including the Trauma Sensitive Schools Initiative, and to make it available for staff working in out-of-school time programs. The proposal seeks to expand the types of trainings offered beyond the three specific program strategies authorized under current law. For WRCE News, I'm Joanne Krulatz.
The Brewers lose to the Tigers. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. A long night for Tyler Alexander. The Brewers' starting pitcher not only gave up 8 runs in just 4 innings, he also got hit twice. On comeback hits from Detroit batters, I asked Alexander how he was doing after the game.
It's a little tight. Yeah, the right calf. We did some work on it and just part of it. The second one wasn't that bad. It sort of hit belt. The first one stung a little bit.
The Brewers losing 9-1, their third loss in a row, the fourth blowout of the season. Pat Murphy.
This is the fourth time in 17 games, so that is concerning.
College football, Badgers offensive coordinator Jeff Grimes on installing a new offense at Wisconsin during spring practice.
If you're doing it the right way, you start with identity and talking about what your identity is. You know, every person has an identity. We're all individual creations and we all have different personalities and different physical characteristics, and a group should be the same way.
That's the Badgers' Jeff Grimes with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly clear and cool tonight with lows in the upper 20s. More sunshine than clouds for Wednesday, warmer with a high in the upper 50s. Some showers and storms Thursday, and becoming breezy, high temperatures well into the 60s. Currently 54 degrees.
reviewing the week's legal news with a friend of the court.
Well, I'm looking forward to Saturday morning. I haven't missed one. Outstanding, just like being in school.
It has been a week in the areas of law and government and the aspiration for justice in America. As always, I am delighted. I am honored that you have chosen to spend some of your weekend time with me in discussion.
Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel. Saturday mornings from 9 to 11.
Teachers are dynamic leaders shaping a new generation. They bring a variety of perspectives from diverse backgrounds, innovating how they teach to prepare students for our fast-changing world. They're skilled experts discovering a universe of solutions, telling stories, inspiring, mentoring, connecting cultures, leading by example. Teaching is a journey that shapes lives. Are you ready? Explore teaching at teach.org. Supported by the U.S. Department of Education and 1 million teachers of color.
Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody. Join us next time as we'll discuss a new way to vote, along with our friend Trigby Olson and Tara Ariano with Best New TV Shows. Join us.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2. You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE. Broadcasting across the state of Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network and around the world on the Civic Media app, this is the Dom Salvia Show. And now, here's your host, Dom Salvia.
Welcome back for hour two of today's encore presentation of the Dom Salvia Show. Starting next week, on Wednesday the 23rd, at this time, you'll be listening to the Maggie Dawn Show. If you want to hear more about Civic Media's lineup changes, you can head on over to civicmedia.us or just stay tuned to your local Civic Media radio station. In the meantime, enjoy Dom's discussion about the anniversary of the January 6th insurrection.
It's Monday, we got our pal Harvey Kay, Professor Emeritus of Democracy from the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay, joining me this hour. Harvey K., welcome. Happy Hang Mike Pence Day, man.
Oh, jeez. I guess you weren't kidding when you said you used that.
Hey, man, we're just call them as we seize them around here, Harvey, and that's what they were chanting 4 years ago today. However, today a little less dramatic. The vice president, of course, the loser in the election, had to call out the numbers, and that had to be a little tough, but no drama today. Harvey, what are your thoughts? Welcome.
I've been thinking about this all day, though I didn't prepare my words at all. The word that comes to mind really is ironic. Mm. It's ironic that the man who instigated a mini insurrection, a battle for around the Congress, who was, as you said, a battle that included, nooses in preparation, that kind of thing. I mean, to think that today, in a peaceful transition, or at least a peaceful recognition of what transpired in November took place. I mean, it actually hurts. It's as if, it's as if not the gods, but as if the devils in the world are putting us through this. They're putting us through this because the Biden administration, specifically Garland, the attorney general, didn't have the decency. I thought you might imagine I say courage, the decency and courage to prosecute him as an insurrectionist. And moreover, that I think it was the Supreme Court that disallowed Colorado's effort to ban him from their ballot, because according to the Constitution and the 14th Amendment, if you have been an insurrectionist, you are not entitled to run for political office, federal office, I assume specifically. No, I mean, it's just outrageous. It really hurts. And I don't know how other people feel. I can tell you that I can laugh at these things in some ways and the irony, but it is the case that it is very unnerving that this man who lives on spewing hatred and speaking vengeance is now going to be occupying the White House. And we've already seen, by way of his nominations or the nominees that he's been talking about for the cabinet positions, that he has no sense. The word decency comes to mind again, but he has no sense. It's not even just decency. He just doesn't care about the United States and what appointing the likes of Tulsi Gabbard to be director of national intelligence. And originally, Gates being mentioned for the attorney generalship. I mean, it's just wild. I mean, if my father was still alive, a decorated veteran of World War II, he would say to me, what the hell is wrong with this generation? Mm-hmm. Okay. That's, I mean, he said that to me once before, and after Bobby Kennedy's assassination, actually. And I could just imagine him being just shocked at witnessing what's going on. I mean, I'm shocked. It's just unbelievable, really. But on the other hand, I'll just mention, I know we were thinking of getting to it later, but maybe we come back to it. Today is the 84th anniversary of a very positive moment in American history, a very progressive moment, when Franklin Roosevelt, on January 6, 1941, delivered a State of the Union message in which he projected a vision of this country as a champion of four freedoms: freedom of speech and expression, freedom of worship, freedom from want, and freedom from fear. Now, he didn't mean that we had achieved that. He meant that we would commit ourselves after the war to pursuing those four fundamental freedoms. And maybe later, if there is time, we can come back to talking about that.
Yeah, ending. And that was that speech, was that literally on today's date in 1941?
Yes, January 6th, yes. And by the way, and this is the other thing, because I know we're going to get to all this stuff. This Saturday, 5 days later, 3 years and 5 days later in the State of the Union message, is when Franklin Roosevelt delivered his vision for an economic bill of rights for the United States and called on Congress to try to enact it, or at least try to realize the aspects of it in American life. So this is a week every year, ever since I began my work on FDR, you know, I guess, was it 20 years ago already? Yeah. Well, some time ago. I mean, I could not, you know, I thought, wow, this is going to be every year. You know, I try to remind people of these things, not because they're just really nice words, but because they really did inspire progressive action.
Yeah.
I mean, it shaped a generation. And what do we have now for inspiring words? We don't have any inspiring words. People seem to be, well, the politicians we have don't know how to create them and don't know how to speak them. And the rest of us seem to, you know, just go along.
Harvey Kay, Professor Emeritus of Democracy at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay, our favorite Delano Democrat. I want to certainly get to the four needs, four issues
freedoms.
There.
Yeah,
the four freedoms. But you brought up Merrick Garland. And I had a discussion last Friday with our pal, James Santel, former U.S. attorney, you know, worked in the Justice Department. And I got to tell you, man, I know how bad Bill Barr was, right? He came out, got in front of, well, he was in the Bush administration, got a bunch of people off there, came out, got in front of the Mueller report, and did all sorts of shenanigans, basically acting as Donald Trump's attorney. Although he did get out before January 6th, he saw the writing on the wall. But Merrick Garland, and I think it was very, it was bad for what Bill Barr did to misrepresent and lie to the American people. But I got to tell you, Harvey, I think the slow walking or the non-committal for Merrick Garland, come on, time is of the essence. We had all the evidence you need. I mean, what do you need? It's pretty, if you're going to do an investigation, this was like the easiest coup to investigate in American history. It was all right there. It was all, come on, people were videoing themselves participating in the insurrection, man. It was like a selfie insurrection. How can you not find the will to pursue it? Harvey, I think Merrick Garland has really grievously failed us. What are your thoughts?
Oh, absolutely. And to imagine that we were all upset once upon a time when Obama nominated him to the Supreme Court, you know, and McConnell and the Republicans blocked it. They wouldn't even consider his nomination. And now we realize that his nomination would have been as tepid as imaginable. You know, there's an irony here too, which, just so I happen to know this, Franklin Delano Roosevelt had a chief of staff, a lawyer, in fact, a judge, former judge, named Samuel Rosenman. And this was it was Rosenman who really put together the famous Brains Trust back in 1931 when the campaign for president was just beginning. And it was Rosenman who really helped guide the FDR years, 12 years of Roosevelt's presidency. And what is amazing to consider is I believe it's Rosenman's granddaughter whom Garland is married to.
Oh, really?
And you would have thought that somehow or other the courage and the chutzpah, as Rosenman was Jewish, would have found its way into that, you know, into the life of Merrick Garland. But no, not at all. I mean, not at all.
Folks, you're listening to the Dom Salvia Show. That's our guest this hour, Harvey K., Professor Emeritus of Democracy at University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. We're going to move on to some of these other topics, our four freedoms, FDR, State of the Union. But we do want to get your comments in on the anniversary, January 6th, 4 years ago today, an insurrection occurred. And now the voters just put that same cat back into the White House. Less drama today, but a couple of callers. Let's get to it. Jack from Racine, you are up. Welcome, Jack. What are your thoughts?
Hello.
Hi there.
I was listening earlier today, and I heard some replay of comments and just heart-rendering testimony from Capitol Police who were there being beaten and by this mob. And I just, those are so effective. And I just thinking, I don't know what's going to happen with these pardons, and I really want to leave you guys with a question as to what you think people ought to do. I know where I'm at. People were out with signs in the streets when Trump was elected and inaugurated, and now if he comes through with pardoning these people who did this to these Capitol Police officers, I don't know. It's a different mood. I'm not sure what's going to happen. I think there's going to be a lot of people very upset whether people are going to be they're back in, they're kind of digging in their hole, not watching the news and stuff. A lot of people, are they going to stay on top of it? And I just want to encourage people to, you know, stay on top of it. I'm not sure what the right thing to do on that particular date is, but, you know, we got to be ready to jump on the stupid things that we know Trump is going to do, not just stupid, probably more criminal. And that being one of them, releasing these killers, really, some of them, you know, and many of them, pardon them and free. And people, you got to make sure people realize Biden didn't pardon these people who had committed murders, etc. You know, he commuted their sentences, and there's a big difference. Someone's going, well, Biden did it. No, Biden didn't do it. What do you think?
Thanks for the call, Jack. I think one of the points is, what do we do? Well, obviously, we got to stay informed. I think that's the first thing we got to do. And we got to be able to articulate a response and an argument back to folks that says, you know, oh, Biden did it. You know, Biden did this and Biden did that. There are distinct differences on actions between these two men on commutation and on what Trump has said he's going to do with pardon. Harvey K., I did see that Enrico Otero, the head of the Proud Boys, he's doing 22 years for seditious conspiracy, has specifically asked Trump for a pardon. How do you think that's going to go over in the party of law and order if Trump follows through on that particular campaign promise? We've got about a minute left in the segment, Harvey.
Well, I mean, seriously speaking, the days of the Republicans where the party of law and order are past. I mean, this was a Republican administration, Republican president who called out the worst elements to try to bring about a coup, basically. I mean, we're talking about a coup d'etat is what would have transpired. You know, I was trying to imagine what kind, at least symbolically, what could people have done today, okay, to register their protest? Yeah. You know, and I imagine they would not have allowed any crowds near the Capitol building. I think they learned their lesson. But maybe people could have all turned out around the Lincoln Memorial in mass. You know, how about a million person march around at the Lincoln Memorial to remind people that the Confederacy almost won the day on January 6, 1941. I mean, that was my thinking. And I mean, the caller's right. I mean, I'm sure he's rather upset because the fact is we don't know of any protests that occurred whatsoever that the man who wanted to stage a coup, you know, definitely did launch an insurrection. Is president
Harvey K., Professor Emeritus of Democracy at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. Going to stick around for this hour. More of your calls as well. Come back with us.
News from the Center, WRCE.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. In recent months, Milwaukee health officials have uncovered significant lead hazards in city schools, mostly due to lead-based paint. Several schools have now been closed as the problem has been found to be more widespread. In late March, city officials formally requested help from the CDC, but in doing so, they learned that the CDC's entire lead program had been eliminated by Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. This is a major problem. Children in the state's largest city are being exposed to lead poisoning at their schools, and the Trump administration is not only refusing to provide assistance, they are eliminating the entire lead program that would help in cases like this one. Now, state and local officials must step up to do something for these kids, since Trump and RFK Jr. are gutting federal support. Milwaukee's children deserve better.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area and on our website at civicmedia.us. Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel.
Ross, calling in.
Thanks for your show. I'm just wondering if we're watching or witnessing a legal system that where what we thought was precedent is now going to be sort of cast away.
The reality is the question that you raise about the future and what are the implications when, in fact, the things we understood always to be bedrocks of our community, of our nation, are no longer that.
Amicus, a law review, Saturday mornings from 9 to 11.
Did you know VA home loans are a key to home ownership for those who served?
In the military, we make a lot of sacrifices, and with the VA loan, it makes it easier for us to get a home.
We were able to purchase this home and then use the money that we were going to use as a down to actually fix up the home. I would tell anybody who is interested in getting a VA loan to just do it.
To learn more about VA home loans, visit va.gov/homeloans.
This is News from the Center, WRCE.
And welcome back to the Dom Salvia Show.
Welcome back for hour two of today's encore presentation of the Dom Salvia Show. Starting next week, on Wednesday the 23rd, at this time, you'll be listening to the Maggie Dawn Show. If you want to hear more about Civic Media's lineup changes, you can head on over to civicmedia.us or just stay tuned to your local Civic Media radio station. In the meantime, enjoy Dom's discussion about the anniversary of the January 6th insurrection.
Before we move on to the four fundamental rights on the 21st Century Economic Bill of Rights, looking back to get some inspiration to move forward, Harvey K., we got one more caller. I want to clean up the lines here. CJ, you are up. Welcome. Happy New Year, CJ. What do you got for us? Uh-oh. What happened to CJ? You got too many. He's on the line. CJ, come on, man. Five. Nope. All right. Hey, we tried, man. Give us a call back. Just a real quick headline here, Harvey, before we move on to other items. The Raw Story reporting. The judge denies Trump's demand to delay fraud sentencing. So we'll take it. I mean, he's going to keep on throwing it against the wall and see what sticks. So far, Judge Mershon is not wavering in that. So, but I'm not sure what the point of sentencing is if there's not going to be any fine or consequence or jail time or probation or ankle bracelets or, you know, I don't know, some sort of consequence, Harvey. But at least it will stick with a conviction.
Who prosecuted that in New York? Does it mention, was that a state prosecution or a city prosecution or a federal?
Well, Rashawn, that would have been, this is the fraud, right? So this would have been, this was Alvin Bragg, I believe, the Manhattan DA. This is on.
Oh, that was, that's what I meant. District attorney or state attorney general of the state. Yep. Yeah, boy. I mean, talk about, you know, we used to talk about Teflon presidents, right?
Yeah, Teflon. Yeah, oh, well, they're all Teflon, you know, until they get caught, right? Who was the mob guy that was the original Teflon Don? You know, and he kept getting off and off and off, and then all of a sudden, you know, you're Teflon until you get convicted, and then you're longer Teflon. John Gotti, that was his name.
Yeah, right. Except with Trump, man, he gets convicted and keeps walking.
Weird how that works. It's almost like there's a couple different levels of justice in this country. Let's move along. Let's talk about something inspiring. And you know, you mentioned the Four Freedoms speech of FDR back in 1941,
January 6th, 1941.
So right. I'll call this Four Freedoms Day. It sounds a whole lot better than Hang Mike Pence Day, but yes. I do that one for the megas. The Four Freedoms, let's dive into that a little bit, and let's reiterate what FDR said and how he defined those, and how do you think that relates or can translate into 2025, Harvey?
Okay, well, the first thing to understand is that When FDR delivers a speech like that, the Four Freedoms speech and later the Economic Bill of Rights speech in 1944, one of the things about it is he has tested the waters, and he feels a certain confidence that when he pronounces these kinds of things, and I'll read what he said in a moment, that he knows the American people are with him on it, okay? Even if they don't necessarily raise the banner, he knows they're with him on it. Yeah. And it's January 41. We have to understand war is already underway, not for the United States yet, but it's already underway in Europe, okay? Nazi Germany has basically conquered all of Europe, and the British are holding out, and Roosevelt is eager to provide what came to be known as Lend-Lease, where we would provide the materials to sustain Britain and its allies against the Nazis. That was otherwise known as the arsenal of democracy idea, that we would be the arsenal of democracy. It was also the case that a war had already been underway for almost
a year. Isn't this a real fancy way of saying we're going to supply some armaments and whatever they need to help them, although we're not going to get directly involved?
Yes, exactly. Gotcha. That. Right. But FDR already knew by January of 41 that the U.S., whether it wanted to or not, would end up in the war. Okay. But what do I mean by that? Well, they had enough intelligence to know that Hitler's plans, once Britain was defeated and occupied, which never did come about because we provided the kinds of materials they needed, that in fact they were assuming they would then take all of North Africa. And from North Africa, the Americas, North and South, became a target that they could put into the, they could see it, so to speak. Yeah. And flying from West Africa to Brazil and the likes of that wouldn't be that much of a challenge. On top of which, their subs were basically patrolling all over the North Atlantic. So FDR knew that what he had to say that night in a speech was in many ways a kind of advance call to arms to Americans. And in the speech, he warned Americans that the dictators, meaning Hitler specifically and Mussolini, were not going to tell us when they were going to attack, and we needed to be prepared. So we would not only need to provide material and armaments to the Brits, we would also need to provide it to enable us when the time came to afford an army and a navy that could win a war. But then he also said, by pursuing this defense effort, did not mean we had to give up the great advances that were made during the 1930s New Deal against the Great Depression. And he actually called for sustaining those initiatives. But then he stops, or I should say he pauses, and he says, this is what they call a peroration in the speech. These are the key words. He says, in the future days which we seek to make secure, we look forward to a world founded upon four essential human freedoms. The first is freedom of speech and expression everywhere in the world. The second is freedom of every person to worship God in his own way everywhere in the world. And I'll shorten the next two because they're a bit longer. The third is freedom from want everywhere in the world. The fourth is freedom from fear anywhere in the world. Now, the first two, freedom of speech and freedom of worship, they're in the first, if you like, four freedoms of the First Amendment.
Mm-hmm.
But he was taking the New Deal experience, providing government and labor efforts to, basically to overcome the Depression. And he was turning that into freedom from want. And then freedom from fear had to do with the fact of racism and anti-Semitism. It was time to transcend those. And when Americans heard those things on the radio, they understood what he was saying. And they actually became the words that guided the war effort. Now, FDR was no saint. He made terrible mistakes along the way. And I'm not talking about the affairs that he had, okay? What I'm talking about is the fact that we'll leave it at that.
We're taking a short break. Harvey K., Professor Emeritus of Democracy, FDR, an inspiration from the past, perhaps someone to look to for the future.
You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE. Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
For WRCE 107.7, I'm Joanne Krulatz. A man was injured in a UTV crash over the weekend. Vernon County Sheriff Roy Torgerson reports that at approximately 3:45 Sunday afternoon, the Sheriff's Office 911 Dispatch Center was notified of the crash on private property along North Glass Road in rural Reedstown in the town of Kickapoo. Chad Laverne Crook, 52, of rural Reedstown, was operating the UTV and struck a fence. The UTV overturned and Crook was ejected. Chad Crook sustained serious injuries and was flown to the Gunderson Health System by Gunderson Air. Also assisting the Sheriff's Office were Reedstown Emergency Medical Service, Reedstown Fire Department, and Wisconsin State Patrol. All emergency personnel were clear from the scene by 5:15. The Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources reminds turkey hunters that the 2025 spring turkey season opens Wednesday. The regular season is open through May 27th, and all 7 turkey management zones will be open for hunting during the spring season. Hunters must bring their spring turkey license, wild turkey stamp, and wild harvest authorization with them while hunting. They are encouraged to review the turkey hunting regulations in the fall 2024 spring 2025 combined hunting regulations before heading into the field. Turkey harvest registration is mandatory and remains a critical component of turkey management in Wisconsin. Hunters must register their turkey by 5 p.m. the day after recovery, online or by phone at 844-426-3734. To register, hunters will need the harvest authorization number found on the paper or electronic harvest authorization. For WRCE News, I'm Joanne Krulatz.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Despite the risk of getting vomited on or having a soda thrown at them, audiences still continue to flood theaters to see the Minecraft movie. It was tops at the box office for the second week in a row. According to Variety, the film showed an impressive hold in its second week, with the crowd size diminishing by only 50% in its impressive second week. The film is now at $281 million domestically and $550 million globally. Minecraft was the only movie that was not a new release in the top five. Coming in at second place was the religious film King of Kings, which brought in almost $20 million just a week before Easter. 20th Century Fox's The Amateur came in third place with $15 million. A24's Warfare came in fourth place with a take of about $8.5 million. The film received rave reviews from critics and is beyond intense. And the thriller Drop came in fifth place with $7.5 million at the gate. In case you're scoring at home, the movie with the worst critic score was in first place, and four critics' darlings rounded out the top five. For more showbiz fun, tune into Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly clear and cool tonight with lows in the upper 20s. More sunshine than clouds for Wednesday. Warmer with a high in the upper 50s. Some showers and storms Thursday. And becoming breezy. High temperatures well into the 60s. Right now it's 53.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
New texter on our text line said this: I think any other president would take these protests very seriously, but our current one couldn't care less. Anybody remember, Nero fiddling while Rome burned? You get a little of that vibe here? The man's off golfing over the weekend as the world economy is lit on fire and nosediving. Can't be bothered.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
If you could change your name, if you could pick your own name, what would you change it to? Daniel Wheeler says, linguistically, Pete's last name is interesting because it requires a wet mouth. Requires a wet mouth to pronounce it correctly. Pete Schwabba, you have to have a wet mouth to say that? That sounds so perverse, Daniel.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Earl Ingram.
This Wednesday on the Earl Ingram Show, the lead-free crew returns to share the latest updates, followed by Dr. Robert Craig in the second hour to review the week's events.
The Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings at 9.
Welcome back for hour two of today's encore presentation of the Dom Salvia Show. Starting next week, on Wednesday the 23rd, at this time, you'll be listening to the Maggie Dawn Show. If you want to hear more about Civic Media's lineup changes, you can head on over to civicmedia.us or just stay tuned to your local Civic Media radio station. In the meantime, enjoy Dom's discussion about the anniversary of the January 6th insurrection.
Harvey Kay, Professor Emeritus of Democracy at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay, joining me this hour. Jess P.S. on the board, you folks on the lines. We got some callers holding, so let's get to it. Talking about, of course, today, January 6th. I like to refer to it as Hang Mike Pence Day, but it is also, as I've been edified by my buddy Harvey Kay over here, the anniversary of FDR's Four Freedoms speech in 1941, freedom of speech, freedom of religion, freedom from want, and freedom from fear. We'll get into that and some more of your comments as well. Let's start with Dana from LAX. Welcome, Dana from La Crosse. Happy New Year's, man. What do you got for us?
Hey, everybody. Say, I like the 1941 version better.
That's what I'm saying, man. If we're going to celebrate one, let's have it be FDR's 1941 speech.
Yeah. Say, you know, there's not much Mershon can do, really, that's going to have any type of impact on Trump. A fine ain't going to matter to him, any of that stuff, because, you know, his fans are going to pay for it. I thought of something last night that Mershon could do that I think would probably have some pretty good impact, the most that I can think of. What he should do is make Trump create a video, and then that would... a video of Trump himself explaining what he was convicted of, and then how and why our system of justice found him guilty, and then force him to send those out on all of his media channels, social media channels, and to all of his email lists. And then I think that is the only way to preserve the history, because they're going to try and rewrite it. And this way, history is preserved.
I like it, Dana. That is a great idea. A little community service.
Yeah.
On record for all time.
A little civic service, too.
Yep, yep. All right. Thank you for the call, Dana. Happy New Year. I like that idea, Harvey. What about you?
I think that's great. And maybe just for the fun of it, we could put him in one of in the movies, the old prison garb of the stripes, you know, put him in something like that, doing just that. You know, I may not be in jail, but this is what it would look like.
Wouldn't cost nothing. Wouldn't really stop him. He's got plenty of time before he gets inaugurated.
I think he would
again
explode. I think just the process of trying to sit down and say those words out loud would cause a little bit of spontaneous combustion.
It would be very difficult for him to get through it, which would make it all the more glorious. Kurt from Madtown, you're up. Welcome, Kurt. Happy days. What do you got for us?
Say, Harvey, I'm hoping you can speak on this. My other half is reading a book. It's called The Demon of Unrest by Eric Larson. Hmm. And she's been reading sections of the book. And the South, especially members in South Carolina, how they plotted to stop the certification of President Lincoln, and how they also plotted to assassinate him. So from what she read, it's like January 6th all over again. And we're repeating history yet again.
Mm. The Demon of Unrest. Thanks for the call, Kurt. Harvey, your comments.
That comparison is the closest that Donald Trump will ever get to Abraham Lincoln in historical stature. the whole story leading up to and in the early phases of the Civil War are absolutely astounding. And I'm not familiar with all of those kinds of details, but they really are astounding. And it's striking. In fact, oddly enough, I was thinking just today about the fact that I would never have expected. Somehow I had a very optimistic view of American history since the time I was in college in the late 60s. I could not have imagined that it would be in the course of my lifetime in the 21st century that we would see the kind of activity that we saw in 1860 and 61. And so, which is to tell you just how shocking it is. And what worries me a lot, I've been worried about this for some years, is the degree to which these kinds of things will come to be viewed as normal. And the cherry on top, or the final push towards that normalcy or normality, whichever word you want to use, is the fact that he has just been confirmed as the winner of the November elections. Mm. I mean, in that sense, if somebody said there is no justice, I would have to defer to that remark. It's unbelievable to think that. And the assassination attempts against Lincoln, I'm sure, were far more numerous than any of us realize. Yeah.
When we talked about the anniversary of the Four Freedoms speech FDR gave on this date in 1941, freedom of speech, freedom of religion, freedom from want, and freedom from fear, was that as much as trying to prep the American population for entry into World War II? I mean, was that the whole basis of this speech, a slow walk, perhaps? I mean, we're coming out of a very protectionist age after World War One. You know, in some regards, I kind of see that playing out right now. You hear, you know, Trump talking about all these tariffs and wanting to kind of pull back of Americans' influence around the world. Was that in the context to really get people prepared for what was, as you mentioned, ultimately going to come?
Yeah, well, I think it was twofold. Yes, it definitely was that. In fact, in the book that I wrote, The Fight for the Four Freedoms, I came to the conclusion in the course of writing that it was a call to arms and almost a declaration of war, because what he's doing is he is projecting what America is meant to be about, going all the way back to the Declaration of Independence. In fact, when I was working on the Four Freedoms speech, I saw it in line with the Declaration of Independence, Lincoln's Gettysburg Address, and now FDR's Four Freedoms speech, really. And so I think it was telling Americans, look, they're going to come for us, the dictators, the fascists, the Nazis, the Japanese militarists and imperialists. And we have to remember that that when we fight, whatever mistakes will have been made in this war effort, that this is what it's about. This is what we have to envision the post-war world being about when that time comes. I think you're right. I think it is in many ways that it wasn't that he was trying to get them militarized. It was that he wanted them to understand that, yeah, that there was, if you like, a progressive mission. I know it sounds very imperialist to say the United States had a mission, but when you're facing fascism, you got to start believing that there's a purpose for opposition and for going to war against fascism.
And there's a reason that the fight will come. It is the freedoms of speech and expression, of whatever religion you choose or choose to not engage in, not forced upon you, a freedom from want.
That's right.
Fear. Yeah.
Yeah. And we shouldn't forget that we're talking about, and when we're talking fascism, I mean, I remember 10 years ago, none of us would have used it, okay, to refer to Republicans it just wouldn't have come to our minds to use them.
No, right.
But nowadays,
it's amazing how times have changed.
Yeah. I mean, I can tell you when I resisted, I really mentally resisted using the term regarding the formation of the MAGA forces and Trump, because
you don't want to cheapen it, right? I mean, it's a historical bad word, let's call it, in my opinion.
Yeah, but when you consider the kinds of things that he's been saying that he would like to do and accomplish, and by the way, the proof is the company one keeps, right? Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. Elon Musk is proof of that very fact. I mean, Elon Musk is now literally pursuing, his ambition is to get this far right-wing party in Germany to become the ruling party. And those are the folks who were like the heirs to the authoritarian regimes of the past. Mm-hmm. So it's amazing. You know, I would also add that if we ever had bothered to go after the billionaires as Bernie had asked us to, we might have been able to temper the power of the likes of Musk and Bezos and that lot.
Harvey Kay, Professor Emeritus of Democracy at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. Temper. You know, and that's the thing. I think, you know, we have the power in the numbers. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, one person, one vote. You know, Musk got a lot of money, but he's only got one vote. And if we allow ourselves, as people do, to be manipulated and cajoled by the money, and that's not an uncommon thing. It's not the first time it's happened. It won't be the last. That's how it rolls. But I think when people get fed up and they tune out and they turn off. And it feels like there's nothing we can do. Guy's got all the money. What is he going to do? Well, that's exactly at the time when we need, you know, the community and people to come together and recognize where the power actually stands. It is with the people. We, through our representatives, can make the laws, can say, hey, if you're going to be hoarding the billions of dollars, here's your new tax rate. If you're going to, you know, I mean, if you're going to be bringing jobs in or out of the country, here's the breaks. Here's how we, as a country, are going to do business from here on out. Here are our priorities, for example. Talk about the New Deal, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, these kinds of things. These are our priorities. If you're just going to, you know, be an Elon Musk and hoard the money, we as a people, well, we can do something about that. We literally can make laws to address it, as Bernie Sanders has mentioned, as you brought up.
Well, in 2 years into the New Deal administration, FDR was elected in 32, so it's 33, 34. In 1934, he had already suggested this in 33, but he seriously called upon Congress to find a way to limit the wealth of the rich. And he did so because he said, one, it's not really good for the economy, and more, and no less important, it's terrible for democracy. They because of the power that they will wield with that money in terms of, you know, public information and the media. What the media was a different form than it is today. But you're talking newspapers, you're talking magazines, you're talking radio, which FDR fortunately learned how to master with his fireside chats. Yeah. But he was seriously worried about the power of the, he called them the economic royalists, to compare them to the political royalists of the American Revolution period. I mean, he was serious.
Aren't we doing this, dealing with this exact same thing still right now? You have the billionaires that are only in the Washington Post, the LA Times.
Yeah, right?
I mean, absolutely. You have Musk over on Twitter, you know, limiting people's ability to express themselves on his platform if they're critical of him. I remember how they used to be so upset when people would get, you know, shut out or tuned out of the social medias. And now the guy that owns it, if he doesn't like what you're saying, he'll pull your check mark or whatever the case may be. But the point being is the money still controls. I mean, you had a Washington Post cartoonist resign after the Post would not publish the cartoon piece of a bunch of the oligarchs, a bunch of the tech bros and Mickey Mouse bowing to a statue of Donald Trump. For some reason, they thought that was just beyond the pale. But what is the damage done? Well, there you have it, man. We're supposed to be the fourth estate, but when it's all controlled by the billionaires and the economic royalists, or whatever the term was, Harvey, we are dealing with these same problems now, or perhaps it's a continuation, maybe it ebbs and flows. What do you think? It seems like you're talking about now when you're talking about, you know, 30s and 40s.
Absolutely. When you consider that Musk must be worth about $350 billion right now. And what, you know, he's been looking into buying either MSNBC or CNN. I mean, how much worse could those channels get? Imagine if Musk is running them, right?
Right. You'll find out real quick. I hear who's the guy that got convicted of the Parkland shooting guy? What, right? The hard right winger guy. What's his name? He's got his InfoWars.
Alex Jones.
Oh, yeah. InfoWars is up for sale. Maybe they'll go and buy some InfoWars. Folks are listening to the Dom Salvia Show. That's Harvey K. We have one more segment we talked about. The Four Freedoms speech from FDR. I also want to talk about, how does that relate to now? And we bring this up. I know you're a big fan, Harvey, but I know you're the expert on the 21st century economic plan for the people.
Stick around for one more segment of the encore presentation of the Dom Salvia Show with his discussion with Harvey K. and Just P.S. about the anniversary of January 6th.
News from the Center, WRCE.
An elegant, intimate experience in fine dining is right here at Ho-Chunk Gaming, Wisconsin Dells. The Copper Oak Steakhouse and Lounge features choice cuts of Angus beef and fresh seafood prepared to perfection over an open flame grill.
complemented by an extensive selection of fine wines and signature martinis. A passion for detail in exceptional dining. The Copper Oak Steakhouse and Lounge at Ho-Chunk Gaming, Wisconsin Dells. Open Thursday through Sunday. Call and make your reservations today.
We are the keepers of the wild. For more than 80 years, we've been committed to conserving the natural landscapes that define our nation. Nothing is more important than maintaining wild spaces for adventurers to explore and wildlife to thrive. We are America's hunters and target shooters. Together with firearm, ammunition, and archery manufacturers, we've supported the conservation of more than 36 million acres of American wildlands. For more information, visit OutdoorStewards.org.
Reviewing the week's legal news with a friend of the court.
Well, I'm looking forward to Saturday morning. I haven't missed one. Outstanding, just like being in school.
It has been a week in the areas of law and government and the aspiration for justice in America. As always, I am delighted. I am honored that you have chosen to spend some of your weekend time with me in discussion.
Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel. Saturday mornings from 9 to 11. Nightlight with Pete Schwabe.
If you could change your name, if you could pick your own name, what would you change it to? Daniel Wheeler says, linguistically, Pete's last name is interesting because it requires a wet mouth. Requires a wet mouth to pronounce it correctly. Pete Schwabe, you have to have a wet mouth to say that? That sounds so perverse, Daniel.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabe. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. This is News from the Center, WRCE.
Thanks for sticking around. We're going to finish up today's encore presentation of the Dom Salvia Show in his discussion with Harvey Kay about the anniversary of the January 6th insurrection.
To Harvey Kay, Professor Emeritus of Democracy at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay, wrapping up this segment with me this hour. Harvey, thank you for joining me. Mondays are so much fun when you come around. We talked about the Four Freedoms speech, 41, in 1941 on today's date. But the other issue, the other conversation, something that we've talked about quite a bit, I want to continue that conversation, 21st Century Bill of Rights. Harvey, it seems, and it's kind of maybe evident today as some of the conversations as Vice President Harris was, you know, reading the numbers and presiding over the electoral count. What happens to the Democratic Party? Where are they going? Are they wandering in the wilderness right now? And I wonder, and I know you're a big fan and the expert on FDR, where the inspiration is, what the message is, what a party should focus on. Number one, certainly to benefit this country, but politically to, you know, bring working folks back into the party, to, you know, a big tent to attract people to the Democratic Party. Is that the 21st Century Bill of Rights? And what does that mean? And how do we go about getting people dialed in to push something like this as an inspiration piece? Because, man, I tell you, I'm looking for some inspiration these days, man. We just see the insurrectionists getting, you know, basically back in office again. What are we doing, Harvey, and how do we do it?
Yeah, well, thank you for asking that question, because seriously, this has been on my mind for several years now. And it doesn't go away simply because the Democrats lose. In fact, right. What happens is it becomes all the more imperative that Americans, that the Democrats, let's be careful, the Democrats are in desperate need of a vision. They are lost right now. No one can tell you. I told a congressman from Wisconsin one time, we can walk down State Street in Madison and say to people, tell me, what is the Democratic Party? What does it stand for? And they won't be able to do it other than to tell it to you in terms that will try to deny what the Republicans assert. No, the Democrats need a vision that will remind them of what, first of all, of what it means to be an American and of what the past has afforded us and can literally show us we can ourselves do. I mean, the New Deal, the war effort. These two things proved that the people united will not be defeated, basically. So today, what the Democrats need to do, and I wish they'd pay attention, if they're not going to pay attention to me and Alan Minsky, the author of the Economic Bill of Rights for the 21st Century, at least go back and read a little history, preferably the fight for the four freedoms, but read some history so they can understand about the four freedoms and FDR's call for an Economic Bill of Rights. Look, this became a part of American thinking. I mean, most of the listeners here aren't going to be as old as I am, but when I finished college in 1971, I expected national health care to be the next thing Congress made happen.
Right.
I mean, it was inconceivable that we would now, 50 years later, find that the contributions to American life, the achievements of the generation of the 30s and the 60s has been under siege for all these years. Americans need to be reminded of what their ancestors were able to accomplish, and remind themselves that we too are Americans, or as Henry Demarest Lloyd once put it, to defend the achievements of our fathers, we have to create new achievements for our children.
Mm. The capabilities of the citizens of this country. Right. And hopefully it doesn't come down to a world war and all those kinds of things for us to realize that. Because that's, you know, we don't want those things. And perhaps we get a little complacent. Yeah, but think about the profit that's been made. You know, sliding insurance companies in to take a piece off of that health care. There's a lot of money there to be made, Harvey. If we're not busy making money, you know, how are we going to provide everyone health care? Because isn't that really, did we sacrifice all those things in the godly pursuit of unholy profits?
Well, all I can say, look, let's assume for a moment, that Americans were truly healthy. How's that?
Okay, let's assume that.
But it is the case that every time a person sits down to figure out how they're going to cover their health insurance, or for that matter, every time people sit down to try to figure out what benefits they're entitled to in health insurance, or what program of health insurance should they secure, they're going to probably get ulcers. I mean, frankly, yeah. I mean, I would think people would want national health care to take the stress out of life, if only that.
If nothing else, if all else remains the same, you still have access to the same doctors and all those kinds of things. It seems right. Like a no-brainer. So what is it? I mean, Harvey, I think it would pull well. Generally speaking, a lot of these things that perhaps people can't answer what the Democratic Party stands for. Well, you know, Social Security, Medicare, those kinds of things, right? I think the default would be some of those FDR kind of programs.
Yeah.
What's the pushback, do you think? Why isn't there more of a connection or more of an articulation, a battle cry for Bill of Rights or, you know, even if we start about, you know, just universal health care?
Well, let's start off with the reality that the billionaires don't only give to Republicans, they also give to Democrats. And if the Democrats ever started sounding like FDR again, you can imagine what the billionaires and the multimillionaires would be whispering in the ears of their agents in Washington and lobbyists, okay? So I think it's a big hurdle to overcome.
It is a big hurdle, and we need the message. We need some guidance. Perhaps looking backward, it will enable us to look forward.
And that's where the labor movement comes in. That's where the labor movement comes in. The labor movement needs a vision as well. And I think in 1944, when FDR proposed the Economic Bill of Rights, labor, both the American Federation of Labor and the Congress of Industrial Organizations, grabbed hold of that idea. And for years, that was their platform. We need to remember that labor and the Democrats need a vision.
Harvey Kay, Professor Emeritus of Democracy at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. Thank you once again, Harvey. Happy New Year. We will talk next Monday.
Thank you very much. Very much.
Thank you for listening to the Dom Salvia Show. Now stick around. Pete Schwabe, Nightlight, coming up next. See you tomorrow.
You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE. Maggie Dawn.
At 3:30, we're talking with Wisconsin Representative Karen DeSanto about the future of public education funding in Wisconsin. She knows a bit about this and how to serve kids as the former CEO of the Boys and Girls Club of West Central Wisconsin.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekday afternoons from 2 till 4.
Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel.
Ross calling in.
Thanks for your show. I'm just wondering if we're watching or witnessing a legal system that where what we thought was precedent is now going to be sort of cast away.
The reality is the question that you raise about the future and what are the implications when, in fact, the things we understood always to be bedrocks of our community, of our nation, are no longer that.
Amicus, a law review, Saturday mornings from 9 to 11. Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us. This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franz, and a federal judge demanding evidence from the Justice Department after a man was mistakenly deported to an El Salvador prison. The Supreme Court ruling that his deportation was illegal.
Judge Paula Sinise says the Supreme Court has spoken and the Trump administration lost. Now she says she needs answers to the question she's been asking for weeks about the steps the government is taking to facilitate Kilmar Abrego Garcia's release from the Salvadoran prison where he was sent. The judge has now ordered senior officials at ICE, Homeland Security, and the State Department to submit to sworn depositions where they'll have to answer questions posed by Abrego Garcia's attorneys.
ABC Stephen Portnoy. A judge denied bail for the suspect in the firebomb attack on Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro's residence. Cody Ballmer facing charges including arson and attempted murder. In Texas, authorities say four students were injured in a shooting incident at a high school near Dallas today. Police still trying to locate the suspected shooter. Also a student. This is ABC News.
Your